I got the amendments. Open the work session on House Bill 2212. Amendments are before us.
Section amendments?
Yes, why don't you go over the amendments?
Chair Hill and Representative Patridge, amendments to 2212, simply change the language to allow for fees to be upgraded, or actually fees to be imposed when names are annexed or appended to the list. That's the only change, and that's very simple.
And then we heard testimony last day.
Covers the dash fours.
Good. That everybody has agreed to.
Everyone is in agreement.
On the dash fives.
And.
Sure, I would like. Sure, agreeing. And DOJ.
She here? There she is. We have, is there a reason? Everybody's agreed, right? Please, like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The only clarification, my name is Cheryl Pellegrini with the Department of Justice. The clarification I wanted to make is that if a telemarketer orders the list, what they get is a list of phone numbers as described in subsection one.
Right.
Only if they ask in addition that the names be appended and pay an extra fee that they get the names.
Representative Patridge?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash five amendments to House Bill 2212.
Thank you.
Representative Patridge moves the dash five amendments to House Bill 2312. Discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2212 as amended to the full House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge moves House Bill 2212 as amended to the House with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, even though Representative Lowe is not here, I think I'd like to move this to the consent, House Bill 2212 as amended to the consent calendar.
Representative Patridge moves House Bill 2212 to the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Open a this is still a work session. What do you want to do? Okay, let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3164. Mark, you want to explain what we're looking at?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge. 3164 requires the Economic Community Development Department to adopt rules establishing industry-compliant voluntary standards for consumer privacy and protection of persons engaged in electronic commerce. It creates the Oregon Gold Star Seal of Approval program for persons who meet these standards, and allows ECDD to impose a civil penalty for persons using the seal without meeting those standards.
Mr. Chair.
Doris, you want to come up, make some comments? This bill is from the this bill is on comes from the Internet Commission. Recommendations.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Dorothy Penwell from the Economic and Community Development Department. I'm here representing some of the folks in our agency that work diligently with the Internet Commission. And I'm here to talk about the bill as it is written and then some suggestions that you might consider in dealing with it. I was hoping also that maybe Jim Craven would be here, and I think he will be in a minute. He had another hearing he wanted to go to for just a moment. This bill suggests that the department create a Gold Star Seal of Approval by developing program rules, and doing some outreach and then creating within the program a penalty situation for those businesses that do not adhere to the Gold Star Seal of Approval standards. I think you probably have a copy of the fiscal impact that was provided to you. And unfortunately, though this is a really fine idea that came out of the Internet Commission, it would require some expenditure of funding either up front or somewhere along the way. We believe that you could probably do this kind of a program, and it would be successful if you could do some good outreach to the public and to businesses and sort of to buy into the reputation that Oregon already has, you know, for quality and just value in what you in the dealings of their businesses. But the bill requires that we do the work without having any reimbursement for its costs, and it doesn't provide for any funding. So we would suggest that maybe if you decided you wanted to do something like this, you might allow the department to collect a fee along with the program as it is developed, and businesses that really want to buy into it and would adhere to these standards would pay a certain fee. And then we would have along the way some monies in order to deal with the situation. But in addition to that, we would have to do some outreach for sure, and we'd probably have to hire somebody that has some business background in this kind of outreach. So the fees could be used for that sort of exercise. The other situation in the bill is that it says that the department should have some ability to penalize those businesses that don't adhere to the standard. And unfortunately, fortunately, the department is not set up to be an enforcement agency. In fact, we have statutory references that say we are not to be anything other than a community and business development and promotional organization. Now, that is not to say that we don't have one program that last session was given to us that says that we do have some penalty obligations, and that had to do with Senate Bill 622 and an opting in organization that if they didn't adhere to the rules and the recommendations of the Economic Development Commission, they would have to pay money back. But that was a notwithstanding situation, and we would either need to have some other agency probably be the enforcement agency, or you could just simply say you would lose your ability to use the seal if you were found to not be following the standards that were set up, or you could do the notwithstanding reference in the legislation. At that point, can you answer any questions?
Doris, you know, looking at the fiscal in terms of what portion, if we were to allow, you know, those participating in the program to pay for the program, in terms of, do you think in terms of that, as you guys have looked at this, in terms of how much self-supporting would the program be in terms of based upon what this fiscal is, to try to reduce the fiscal impact by allowing the users of the program to pay for the program itself, understanding we may have a portion of the program that we may need to fund.
Yes.
In terms of, I'm just curious in terms of, I guess, I'm not looking for specifics here.
Probably half of the cost of the program. And the other thing you might do is that if there are other business organizations, not necessarily businesses, but groups of businesses that might be able to participate with the department in putting together a program like that and help fund in some way that some of those costs.
How could this meld with some existing programs in terms of looking at the purpose of what this is try to create some uniqueness about Oregon products, Oregon opportunities with existing programs that are existing in to meld it there so that we can try to say, okay, here's an opportunity to extend. We can do what the Internet Commission wanted, extend an existing program and give it sort of maybe new life and bring additional people into the program so that we're not just creating something new to stick on the outside. We look back at existing programs to sort of say, if we reorganize these programs, we could do take advantage of this, maybe use some existing dollars, still not precluding the additional dollars.
Right. Mr. Chair, I I think that this actually sort of falls along in line with a lot of the work that's been done on, if you might recall, the name Brand Oregon that we've tried to use in a number of areas. I think the governor had a recommendation this legislative session for some funding, but had to do with agricultural outreach and whatever. And the governor's sustainability program also has a Brand Oregon element. So, in a way, this does fit in some way along with that. I don't think there's been done, any analysis has been done about how you might piggyback onto that, but I think I should probably do that kind of an analysis to see if there's some portion of that that might go along with other things that have been done.
Is there anything you're trying to accomplish in 8 to 8 weeks at the end of April?
We could certainly try to do that, Mr. Chair. The other thing I think that would be important is to talk about anything that's happening at the federal level or nationally that should be considered in discussing whether this is really something that we ought to try to do or not.
What about opportunities to partner with trade associations and things in terms of that exist in order, giving them, you know, trying to take advantage of our unique structure here from tax structure and trying to give a unique sort of picture of Oregon from an internet perspective?
Mr. Chair, I think that's exactly what we'd want to do, is partner with some trade organizations, American Electronics Association, et cetera, to talk about how that might be done in conjunction with them. I don't think that it would be very successful at the state of Oregon and government, that it would have to be in a business orientation sense.
I mean, I'm even thinking beyond just getting traditional trade organizations in terms of that have found new channels on the internet in terms of for Oregon product, in terms of sort of bringing them into the discussion as well, rather than just saying, oh, it only has to be electronic, but, you know, what about, you know, wheat and grass seed and those types of things, sort of trying to take advantage of a whole broad thing to sort of bring people to this, try to make this more than just, oh, it's computers. You know, I think it's like the conversation we've had about trying to figure out in terms of how we can capture the uniqueness of what the Internet Commission has done without necessarily saying it's just Internet, because it's beyond that. It's now other things, and trying to bring in these other organizations that exist that, you know, we've created out there, and trying to create a more master approach in terms of how we attack electronic commerce from a competitive standpoint for the state.
Well, certainly, Mr. Chair, the department works with industries on an industry level rather than just business level, and I think that's exactly what we'd want to do, because businesses are in business to do certain things and not just e-commerce, so they just use that as a way to get there, promotional, sales, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, I think we want to be able to do that kind of an analysis, go quick, to see if this is a good, at least a good idea to start with. So we'd be glad to do that, if you'd like.
Yes, we would.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any other questions for Doris?
Okay, maybe we'll work with Mark, and we'll find maybe we get a little mini work group in terms of bring some concepts back in terms of current target for the end of April.
That's good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3164? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3164. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3359. Mark, do you want to explain what we're looking at?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3359 has been officially gotten stuffed.
Will be.
Will be. And the change, Representative Patrick can probably explain, but did you want me to go into detail on?
Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. What the new bill will do is, when a broker is discharged, the brokerage firm issuing the discharge is required by the National Association of Security Dealers bylaws to file a U-5 termination notice, disclosing information regarding customer complaints against the broker and internal investigations of the broker's conduct. This information is useful to the investing public and brokerage firms that are screening potential salespeople. And so this requires securities broker dealer to report to the Department of Consumer Business Services information regarding salesperson's license to broker-dealer, and requires the director to establish reporting requirements. Holds a broker-dealer liable only if the salesperson shows convincing evidence that the broker-dealer knew the report contained a falsity when drafted, or that the broker-dealer acted in reckless disregard as to the statement's truth or falsity. Mr. Chair, we have dash ones and dash twos. Dash two incorporates the dash ones, and the dash twos are what we will be looking at today.
City Manager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert. I represent D.A. Davidson. It's a securities brokerage house. It's based in Montana, but we have two branches in Portland and one in Penn. We're moving out. I thank Representative Patridge for letting me use a bill of his that was being forwarded off by Representative Crummels, who was kind enough to let me use his bill, and Representative Hill for letting me have this hearing today. This is pretty simple. I'm using the relating to clause of public notification because that's what this is about. A U5 form is a public notice that the National Association of Security Dealers requires to be filled out when a broker is terminated. The brokerage houses fill it out, send it to the National Association of Security Dealers, and then it's available to both the public who's looking for a new broker and a brokerage house that may be looking to hire a new broker. The problem is that we find that a lot of times when a broker is terminated, oftentimes for problems having to do with how he treated client funds or other things that he doesn't want to get out, he will hire an attorney, and the attorney will say that they're going to file a defamation lawsuit. So what you find is you have many firms who report that a broker left for voluntary reasons rather than filling out the actual reasons. This goes against and undermines the policy action behind the U5 form. So all we're doing is asking that you follow Montana, Idaho, and Washington at this point, and giving some immunity when that public forum is completed with the utmost of truth. And let's see, it says clearly that the statement regarding the representation was not false in any material respect. So it follows the letter of the law. It follows as far as the wording on liability, and it follows Idaho, Washington, and Montana as far as adding this to the statute for securities brokers. DCBS is here as well, and they've helped draft the amendments with me, and they're for it. And I will tell you, I did, knowing that I was doing the gut and stuff, which I hate it when people do to me, went around and tried to find people who are against it. And just as the article, I have some articles for you from the Wall Street Journal on this issue. I'll bring those up in a minute. Just as the Wall Street Journal reported, there really isn't anyone against this. In Washington, Idaho, and Montana, there was no one against the bill. And in the article, it says that Ms. Botner, who's the head of the Securities Division, said it's like arguing against mom, God, and apple pie. So pretty simplistic, and I made copies of that, so I'll bring that up.
Well, I'm ready to make history today. Did DCBS want to come up?
I have a question.
Let him.
Why clear and convincing as a standard?
I'm sorry, pardon?
Clear and convincing is the burden of proof on the plaintiff to show that it was made in bad faith. Why did you choose that standard instead of preponderance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I didn't choose the language. Legislative Council did. So I assume that it was in line with other wording.
Great. That you're just here?
Yeah. You didn't work on this.
I know, I'm just here. You can answer the question. Is that a higher standard than preponderance? Is clear and convincing higher?
It is. Okay.
It's a higher standard than...
I know, but usually litigation of this sort has preponderance and clear. Isn't that right? No? Am I wrong? Guess I'm wrong. Okay.
Yes.
I hate it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lowe, for the record, my name is Jim Harlan. I'm a senior policy analyst with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. One reason they're using a clear and convincing standard here is because most of the case law dealing with this particular issue is going off on a clear and convincing standard. And
obviously, I haven't done much of this kind of litigation.
they're striving for a level of uniformity dealing with this particular issue, and that's why you see that language there.
Is there any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3359? Hearing and seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3359, open a work session on House Bill 3359. Representative Patridge?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3359.
Representative Patridge moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 3359. Discussion?
It's clear to me that this is going to pass convincingly.
Is there any objection to the adoption of the dash two amendments to House Bill 3359? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 3359 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge moves House Bill 3359 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 3359 be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Patridge moves that House Bill 3359 as amended be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion?
Yeah, that's probably a good place for it.
Any objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. Let's open up public hearing on House Bill 3374. Working on explaining what we're looking at.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3374 permits public bodies to receive and accept communications or transactions electronically. It grants public bodies the authority to make rules to give notice when a public body will begin electronic receipt of transactions and require that those transactions conform to existing electronic communications laws. Prohibits public bodies from requiring only electronic delivery or acceptance of communications or transactions. And requires public bodies to report statutes that prohibit electronic communications and transactions to the Legislative Council Committee for review and proposal of appropriate legislation. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Colleagues, in terms of the concept behind this bill is to give a blanket statute to agencies and public bodies to allow them that if the wording in a statute would limit their ability to place a form online and accept information electronically, that this is a mechanism they could use this process to go ahead and start an electronic process, and then the capture in Section 2 is to tell us that they think that the words in the statute would prohibit them because it might say, you know, duplicate copies or something, that then they can send it back to the Legislative Council where we could bring it together and then have a policy discussion as to whether we think it's appropriate to change those things to conform with the ability to accept electronic transactions. And then I have it sunsetting after a period of time, allowing the blanket opportunity to occur and that to clear the way they have to come forward. And we actually have a policy discussion in the legislative body about it. And the key is that not allowing agencies to use this statute to take forms that were once based on paper and move 100% that if today they're not allowed to do it electronically, is that they can do it electronically, but they still have to maintain the paper process until we make a policy decision as to change the statute. That's what the under Section 1, Subsection 4 is to try to capture.
Okay, can I ask a question of Rob? Yes. Sorry, or you, Jim? Is the Judicial Department okay with this? Because, you know, a lot of the paperwork there, how does this square with their process for implementing forms and
they're going to do it on their own. It's something they'll do on their own initiative.
Right. They'll do it on their own initiative.
They're not required to do anything. They'll do it on their own initiative, and then if there's a question for keeping multiple copies or whatever, then what this does is they can then do that electronically. But they have to report that to Legislative Council so we can have a policy discussion about that.
Okay.
So I don't think anyone,
Wally's fine with
object.
It. Okay.
I can't speak for the Chief Justice.
I will. Sure. Greg?
You were there.
It doesn't require anyone to do anything. It allows them the ability to go through this process, through a public process, to say, we're going to go do it, then go do it. It allows the acceptance of it.
And then square it.
And then we can square it later. Greg?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Legislative Council Committee would be pleased to take on this responsibility. I think it fits within what we would normally work on. If it turns out to be a task that requires gathering together of diverse interests to come up with a solution, we would probably enlist the help of the Oregon Law Commission through its program committee to see if the commission could take on that kind of responsibility. But with or without that, I'm sure that we can meet the requirements of Section 2.
Dave, do you want to come up and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, the Committee, excuse me. Dave Kanegi, Executive Director of the Oregon Law Commission and Associate Dean at the Willamette University College of Law. The testimony I prepared in writing and is presented to you here was based on I think may have been a misunderstanding in my communications with Committee Administrator Jolly. That is that there would be a combination of 3374, the bill currently under discussion, and 3165. Frankly, it's 3165 that would implicate the Oregon Law Commission. If that bill is deferred, is not advancing, I have nothing to add except that what Greg suggests makes very good sense to me under 3374, and if we can lend assistance to the Legislative Council, we would do so.
Any questions?
No, that works for me.
Thank you. Charles Stern.
Members of the committee, my name is Charles Stern. I'm the Amhill County Clerk, and I chair the Oregon Association of County Clerks Legislative Committee. And I want to speak in support of this bill, but I do have a couple of things I'd like to raise in connection with it. The recorders of Oregon and nationally have been working cooperatively with various industry groups to develop means for recording electronically. In fact, we even publish a little bulletin on our efforts, and the task force explores XML for e-recording. We've got a number of areas where we're approaching, and we see where things are going is going to be a combination of things. We see paper recording is going to continue to happen. We see that there will be probably what is referred to as image submission. That means you scan something, you send it. We see things with that image with a electronic wrapper in which data is in the wrapper that will populate indexes, but it has to be verified because was it correctly entered into the wrapper to what was actually in the document. And then we see the what is referred to as the XML of recording, in which the document itself is based on certain standards of tagging in which the index will be populated straight from the document itself, in which they call dark recording. You're only involved if the system says something doesn't match the tagging, somebody needs to look at it. So there's a number of areas that we're looking at and exploring, and so we kind of welcome the legislators opening up some of the doors for us to move forward, because as you're aware, it's hard to get vendors to spend money in development without a it's kind of the chicken and the egg thing. You give us the opportunity, the vendors will start to develop the software to allow for it. One of the areas in which I have a concern in the bill is while it purports to open this to public bodies, if you look at the definition of public bodies, and that's in ORS 192.410, Sub 3 includes every state officer, agency, department, division, bureau, board, commission, every county and city governing body, school district, special district,
municipal corporation, and any board, department, commission, council, or agency thereof, and any other public agency of the state. It's pretty broad. Not all of those have rulemaking authority. Not all of them even have ordinance-making authority. And so our suggestion is in sub three, that a public body may adopt rules, that that be expanded to include resolutions, ordinances, and published policies, so that we can spread it across these other divisions of public bodies in their definition. Counties can't do publish rules, adopt rules. And so that's our only suggestion, is that we have to develop a mechanism to reach it down to some of these other agencies. What I've represented to the chair was that one of the areas that I'm really interested to begin exploring is state agency liens that are recorded with the counties. We have a very defined customer, and should this bill pass, that would be where I would immediately begin to focus, is discussions with the Department of Revenue and say, and with our software developer, say, now let's start develop this policy or this rule, how we're going to do this, and then expand that to other state agencies who could then record electronically. Once those things are running smoothly, we can open it up then to other types of documents. So those are some of the things that we're interested in doing, but we don't feel that we can do that in the world of adopt a rule. And so we're just kind of opening it up.
Any questions for Mr. Stern? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Why don't you just ask Greg?
Greg, you want to answer any question about rules?
Mr. Chair, what can I do for you?
I'm just curious in terms of when we allow the public body to adopt rules, is this sufficient since we have a notwithstanding above it, so that any public body would be able to adopt a rule? I don't know. I guess I'm not concerned what the form of the rule is. I'm just curious. Do we need to go and expand rule to be all those other things in a sense?
Mr. Chair, from a legal standpoint, probably not. If you want to make sure that all the public bodies that will be involved in this actually understand what it is that they're supposed to do, specifying what other forms a rule might take might be helpful.
Would you accept a conceptual amendment?
I would accept a conceptual amendment.
Greg doesn't want us to do a conceptual. Just wait till Monday.
What?
No, I'll just wait till Monday.
Let's bring it back to you. So, is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3374? Welcome.
Chair Hill, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Slank. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office. Representative Lowe asked the question earlier.
I already spoke for this. It does. It's okay.
Okay. we're following this bill, and we don't have any problem with it. We actually have independent authority to do this on our statute, in our statutes that we got passed last session to do our own.
I do remember that we did that, and I just didn't want this to foul that up.
It doesn't foul it up. It does make it easier because it allows other public bodies with which we would like to communicate, because as the chair of the committee knows, we're interested in e-commerce and working in this area. It allows them, makes it easier for them to communicate with us. There's one thing I would note for you. It's not a problem yet. If you look at lines 19 and 20 on page 1, you'll notice it says public body may not require only electronic delivery or acceptance of communications or transcripts. This is not a problem yet, but in the future it may be something that comes back for purposes of discussion. Just as a matter of interest, you might note that the federal courts for some complex litigation have set up where there are a lot of attorneys involved and a lot of evidence that's circulating around, have set up electronic ways that they have people communicating with the court that they require as a way to coordinate interstate cases or cases that involve a lot of attorneys and eliminates paperwork. I don't believe it's an issue currently with the Oregon courts because I think those kinds of interstate cases tend to go to the federal courts, but it's just an issue you should be aware of. It doesn't require an immediate amendment. So those are the two things I thought I would mention in response to Representative Lowe. We don't have a problem with the federal. We're looking forward to cooperating with other agencies, with state agencies on this issue, and to answer some questions.
On that topic, I guess my intention is this is not to be all-encompassing. This is not to be all-encompassing. This is to say you can't use this authority to take a transaction which is paper-based today and solely under this provision of law make it solely electronic, because that's a policy decision I think the legislature needs to have, because we've said before we set up a structure, and there may be a reason or a rationale why we would say, yeah, you can do electronically, but I also want, you know, so it's like if an agency goes and says, oh, this frees me up, and 100% of the transactions go electronic, there'd be no reason. We could then say, it makes sense, let's go over and make a requirement for electronic. I just didn't want to be caught in a situation where an agency goes out and uses this, and then, you know, 50% of their people don't have access because it'd just be easier for the agency.
Chair Hill, members of the committee, as I said, I don't think it's a problem now with anything we're doing, but it's probably an issue that will come back to you on an individual basis, which appears to be what you want. But on the whole, the bill doesn't create any harm, and we're looking forward to it, enabling state agencies to be able to work with us. I hope that answers your question.
Great.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
Great.
Mr. Chair, as long as we're discussing amendments to address a concern I think Mr. Swank has raised, I'd suggest on line 19, after 4, language to the effect that this section does not authorize a public body to require only, and that way you're limiting the exception to this act.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Anybody? Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3374? Hearing seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3374. Mark, if you could work with Greg and Tuesday. We'll schedule for Tuesday. Okay. You could schedule back up, and we'll schedule for work session.
Okay.
Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3372. Mark, you want to explain what we're looking at?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3372 requires DAS and state agencies to implement portfolio-based management information to better manage their information technology resources, and requires the department to develop and implement a plan for managing distributed information technology assets. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. This bill was worked on as an opportunity to try to address some issues with procurement and as it relates to technology, and we're working with DAS, and welcome.
Thank you. Chair Hill, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Terry, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here today to recommend the passage of this bill. You have my written testimony, and we say pass House Bill 3372 as introduced. We would suggest an amendment. Section 2, sub 5, is requires a state agency information technology project may not proceed without prior certification by the department. The department may establish thresholds at the agency level based on project costs, potential project risk for agency size and budget. Our belief is that we have this authority now in Chapter 283, and this seems to be not required in order for us to exercise this. in this bill, in short, is proposes a decision support system that addresses costs, benefits, and risks for planned IT investments. I think what's real important about this is it fits our state's enterprise model of collectively managing IT investments. And I know we've talked about this in this committee and in the other committees about this approach in state government where we're collaborating and putting in place methodologies and tools that will assist leadership in reviewing investments and maximizing return for agencies in the state. The portfolio management involves creating and maintaining an inventory of IT assets. It ensures that our IT investments and plans relate to the statewide strategy. On the ground, we expect it to help us make better IT procurement and investment decisions, help us to understand and utilize a common method for determining total cost of ownership, be able to identify what IT assets we have, know where they're located, calculate asset value and TCO, and determine how they're changing over time. There's a whole list of benefits that we get from this, everything from complying with software licensing requirements to managing leased assets better, managing data acquisition and maintenance, enabling improved data integration. The list is long. I think the important point for us to make here is that we want to create the repository of information that will allow us to understand where our investments are and how we're going to use them in the future. And I know this committee and other committees in the legislature have been asking a lot of questions of us and state agencies about this very thing, and we want to be able to give those answers. This approach has been at play for some time. We've been researching it in strategic planning and review for a couple of years, and there are state agencies who are in the process of looking at using this technique. And what we've done is tried to coordinate those efforts, bring in the coordinated approach to this. And what we've done is we have a project, a committee. We have a steering committee that's made up of the key partners in this, Judiciary, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Transportation. On that steering committee, we have the state controller. It's obvious that he has an interest in this risk management. We need to have the information that is required in order to manage our risk and ensure our assets. These strategic partners have made a commitment to this, before the end of this biennium, to make a joint decision about acquiring the tools that will fit over the long term. I think it's important that we manage the expectation about when this fully fledged portfolio management system will be in place. Our hope is that before the legislature meets next session, before we go through our budget process, that with these key agencies that we will start with the desktop and we will have that information about the desktop available to us. Now, what we gain from that is we're going to be able to make better purchasing decisions, drive discounts down by making aggregated purchases and understanding when and how we can do that. We have some of the partners are in the room. We have Elizabeth Harchinko is here from the Department of Revenue, and Mike Bannon is here from State Police. We had Dave White here for a while. He was prepared just to testify. I would just say that there's a great deal of support for this concept and for this bill, and I have a hunch we're preaching to the choir here. But I'd be glad to answer any questions, and if you'd like to have testimony from anyone else, bring them up.
Any questions for him?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
With your permission on the amendment, to go to Legislative Council for that.
Work with Mark, okay. And we will make sure that those are drafted.
Thank you.
Now, I'm well aware, and I want to give any agency that is defined as in Section 1, Subsection 2, the opportunity right now to come forward and explain why they're different and they should not be in the definition of state agency. I don't see anybody coming forward.
Let me ask a question. Branch, it says branch. and the judiciary is okay with this one too?
No, the courts are excluded.
Courts are
the Legislative Assembly and the courts are excluded.
Except, okay.
So this are separation.
Just making sure that they're excluded.
But they have said their willingness to come and participate in this. We already had.
I don't want to be toast when I go home. So there you go.
We are separate. I just want to there, and I guess I will institution. So that I'll make it clear. Institution in my mind means an educational institution. Higher ed participates in this. This is anybody who's drawing money out of the state treasury to pay their bills. This is all-encompassing. Nobody's special. Nobody's different. So, you know, the opportunity is for anyone who's drawing money out of the state treasury to come forward and explain why they should not participate in this program. Now's the chance to come up and tell us why they're different.
Did all entities that may be affected and that you may anticipate have concerns about this receive any special notice about this hearing today?
No one has received special notice. This has been on the schedule for, I think, a week. And I'm confident that they're listening and they're out there and they know exactly what this is. But I just want to make it clear on the record that nobody gets an exception. Nobody's going to come and negotiate a side deal explaining why they're different and they can't participate. It isn't going to happen. So.
The Democratic Party would like to take a caucus about now, can we?
Go ahead.
Thanks a lot.
I think this issue becomes too important in terms of the sheer dollars that we're spending, and this is the only way we're going, as a legislative body, get control. It doesn't take away anybody's authority to make their decisions. It goes back and says, develop a plan. You have the plan. You shouldn't have any problem coming forward and explaining why you need the dollars to do what you're doing. And then it creates the mechanism to reduce the overall cost through procurement. So I think in terms of it will ruffle feathers because people who think that they're different, but the opportunity is to come and sit right there and tell us why they're different.
Are we going to go into immediate work session, or are we going to?
No, we've got amendments that we need
good.
To get drafted, and
good.
I welcome any board, commission, state officer, department, institution, branch, or agency of the state government whose costs are paid wholly or in part from the funds held in the state treasury to show up and explain why they're different and why they should not be part of this. I think the burden is on them. And the opportunity is right there.
Okay, when is our next hearing on this one?
We need to get amendments drafted, and Representative Patrick has some amendments as well he's working on, so we'll put it out. I don't know.
Okay.
So probably next week or week after.
Yeah, I don't anticipate huge problems with this, but...
You understand where...
I do understand where you're headed.
So I just want to be up front and clear on this. And I'm pretty confident that, and I guess we should ask Mike Greenfield to sit right next to them while they do it. So then I think we'll be clear that we're all on the same page on the direction that we're going. So, okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3372 that has not had an opportunity to?
Oh, I guess I know why I had the inquiry about the court. Jim, can I ask another question? Yeah. Thanks. It says, except for the Legislative Assembly, the courts and their officers and committees. Well, there's two parts, really, to how the courts function, and one is state and one is county. Is it your contemplation that this piece, this definition, includes both that part of the county that assists with court facilities?
Measuring the state out of the judiciaries. The judicial branch's budget would not be covered in this.
Yeah, but you see the court facilities paid out of county funds.
And not be
state,
this bill.
Not, okay.
It's only agencies where you have the state treasury. So
okay.
It's agency. Okay. Any questions, concerns?
Well.
Anyone would like to see come and talk to us about this?
Think about it.
Okay. We will
And seeing no other people who want to testify on House Bill 3372, we will close the public hearing. And I believe that that is cleared our agenda. So without further business before the committee, we are adjourned.